This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards on the Line. I'm your host, Christopher D. Littlefield. With me this week is Rhea Papagiorgio. Rhea, thank you for coming on Postcards this week.
Chris, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for dealing with all the scheduling stuff, too. I'm a little under the weather, still a little bit congested, but I feel much better than I did this morning. So thank you for rescheduling. And also, we couldn't record last night because you were watching a little game,
weren't you? Watching the Chiefs win the Super Bowl championship!
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, I'm glad you're happy about how the Super Bowl turned out.
Yay! Well, thank you.
Yeah. Today we're discussing the fan response to Maps and Legends, the second episode of Star Trek Picard. If you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 368 comments, which is an 18% increase in the number of comments from our postcards episode for the season premiere. There were a lot of comments this time.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it took a long time to curate all of the comments.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, it was really nice to see all the deep threads and discussions that went on. It was really cool. Rhea, you've never been on Postcards, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
You know what that makes me?
What's that?
First time podcaster!
That's right. I hope you do more podcasts in the future.
Well, we'll see. I'll try not to screw it up.
And you got a mic especially for this,
I
too, right?
I did, yes. I hope it sounds okay.
It sounds good from where
Yay!
I am. We'll see after we edit.
Yeah.
Well, before we get started with this week's listener comments, I'd like to respond to some listener feedback. On Twitter, Sarah Skywalks Rise, also known as @JediTink, said, "So happy that @CDLittlefield and @MissAmyNelson read my comment in the Postcards on the Line. I even got a new commenter jingle sung by Amy. I feel so special." Well, Sarah, if that's your first name, you are special, and we're so glad that we got to read your comment, and I'm also really happy that Amy sang for you as well. On the Facebook post for last week's episode, in which I posted a pic of Amy Nelson and me in our scants on the red carpet at STLV, Tim Hans wrote, "Don't know who has the best legs." Well, I guess you guys will all have to decide for yourself if Amy or I have better legs.
I will say nothing.
But you were at STLV. That's where we met last year.
Yeah. In fact, did I take that picture?
You might have.
I might have taken that picture.
You may have.
And men in scants, oh my gosh, yes. I mean, I would vote for men in nothing but scants from here on out. Mr.
Right?
Sexy Legs,
yeah.
Littlefield.
Oh, thanks. I work hard on him, so. And Gemma Morrow wrote, "Honestly, he looks great. I'm just not used to guys in scants."
Get used to it.
You're right. I don't know if it's Gemma or Gemma, but on your comment in the post, I posted a bunch of other pictures of scanted guys at STLV. It's all over the place. It's fun. It's amazing, and they're very comfy. I think they're sexy too.
Agreed.
Wilson Cruz told me that I looked sexy. I know I've mentioned that before, but I just never get tired of saying that.
Well, he was not wrong.
Ah, shucks. And thank you to all of the listeners who pointed out that I initially mislabeled this as episode 3 of Picard in the thread. It was 2:50 a.m. when I got up to write the post, so my brain wasn't fully awake. And I have just a little bit of housekeeping for the commenters out there. you know, one of the things that we love most about the Babel Conference is that it's much more open-minded and far less toxic and mean than other fan pages, don't you think, Rhea?
Definitely.
Yeah. So just remember as you're commenting that we're simply sharing our opinions with each other. So please be respectful and kind to each other at all times. There were a couple moments in the thread this week in which some people got a little bit testy with each other. And I understand that Star Trek is something that we're all passionate about. So it makes sense that we all take things a little bit to heart and personally, but just be nice to each other.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the things that makes the Babel Conference so special and enjoyable.
Yeah. And do keep those comments coming because we love your feedback. Please keep in mind that comments may be edited for time. Well, Rhea, what'd you think of Maps and Legends, episode 2 of Star Trek Picard?
Well, okay, so I get a first impression from the first time I watch an episode. And then after I rewatch it, you know, I kind of get another impression. And comparing episode 2 to episode 1, the first time through, I was blown away. I just loved it. Episode 2... I didn't love it as much the first time through. However, as I rewatched it, I think I've seen it 4 or 5 times. Each time I liked it more. I picked up a little more of the layers that were going on in the episode. There was so much I like. I loved F8. I loved F8. Yeah. I loved that first scene because really identified. Hell yeah. Yeah, I totally identified with the people that had to work on First Contact Day. And it got me thinking of, you know, well, what if I worked with synthetic life forms, you know, how would I treat them? How would we treat them? Yes, I'd have them saying hell yeah, or probably other inappropriate things. There was a lot in this episode that I liked. It left me with a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, because you don't want to answer things too early here in the season. But like I said, the more I watched it, the more I liked it.
Yeah.
I will have to say though, Narek, not hot.
You don't think he's hot?
No, he looks like a cheap Ethan Peck Spock knockoff.
Some people think he's hot.
Yeah.
But it's fair if you don't.
Yeah. Just my two cents.
I don't really have an opinion on it.
Maybe if he didn't look so much like Ethan Peck Spock, it'd be different.
I don't think there's a comparison.
No.
With Ethan Peck.
No.
Well, let's get to the listener comments. Rhea, go ahead and get us started, please.
Alrighty. From apparently a fellow Hellene, Pete Fotopoulos. He says, good morning, plastic people. I laughed out loud when I heard that line, yet at the same time was taken aback that artificial life forms in the Trek universe are apparently no longer equal. Also, can't wait to see the extent of Bruce Maddox's involvement in this. Well, I agree with you, Pete. I'm kind of curious if we'll actually see Bruce Maddox or if he'll just be kind of teased throughout the series. But yeah, it's kind of crazy that here we have in this case, artificial life form being discriminated against by the Federation. Like a lot of the discussion in the Babel Conference said, you'd think we'd have gotten past that by the 24th century.
Yeah. Jim Stoffel says, from start to finish, excellent episode. Picard's health worries me a bit. Hope they don't kill him off by the conclusion of the show. I loved the great plot about the secret Romulan group more powerful than the Tal Shiar. Great arguments with the Admiral and Picard. The Federation has truly lost its way. But my favorite scene is we get to finally see a Commodore again. I screamed in glee, as any fanboy would. I really can't wait till next week. I can't wait either. And it was really cool to see a Commodore. We haven't heard that since TOS,
yeah,
right?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
He says, we finally get a Commodore back on Star Trek, and she's a Romulan. Or so we think.
I think she's a Romulan.
I think so, yeah. Too. In fact, I thought she was at first. It didn't occur to me until like the second viewing that, she's probably a Vulcan or a finger quotes Vulcan.
Yeah, I thought she was a Romulan right away because on her desk, there were so many Vulcan things, symbols and artifacts and whatever. It just seemed like she's overdoing the, hey, I'm a Vulcan thing.
Yeah, kind of like they're overdoing the, hey, Narek is hot thing.
Yeah.
All right, Matthew Pittard. Is it Pittard? We'll call you Pittard. Says, notice the use of the light. F8 steps from total light to shadows, to half shadows to light. It's a masterful way of creeping the audience out. Very nice observation there.
That is a cool observation. I've seen it 3 times now, and I noticed that the 3rd time after I read your comment, Matthew, and I thought that was really cool, the lighting in that first scene. G Buttersnaps, or Ghee, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, says, I love your last name though, Buttersnaps, says the tattoo on the back of the head of the last synth. F8, is that an allusion to the fate of humanity if we become too reliant on AI? Interesting. I like that. Janessa Kiharda says, I never liked science fiction. Is probably one of the most meta things ever said on Star Trek. I completely lost it and laughed my ass off at that.
That was great. That was great.
This is one of those moments where the show and the character become a little bit self-aware, and it's more like a joke for us, the fans, right?
A joke for us, but yet it fits in perfectly with Picard's character.
I found myself rolling my eyes a little bit at that comment.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, ugh, I don't know. It was felt self-referential.
I agree. It was definitely for us, but coming from Picard, okay, I can buy it.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Duncan Barrett says, this is my favorite of the first three episodes, mainly for the sweary Admiral Clancy. When she spoke that way to our beloved Jean-Luc, I almost fell off my chair. Way to make an audience hate your new character. Rubbing it in that we've seen three episodes, Duncan.
Oh, yeah. Duncan's seen the first three episodes, and I think it was also Duncan that said, we have to treat the first three episodes like the pilot.
I've heard that from others as well, so.
Yeah. But we've got to talk about the swears thing. There was a long conversation in the thread about the F-bombs in this show, in this episode, and then comparing it to, you know, when we got them in Discovery for the first time in Star Trek. What did you think about the Admiral dropping an F-bomb at Picard?
I thought it was absolutely perfect. And I come from, okay. I'm not a big sweary fan, you know, to swear just to swear. You know, you're not impressing anyone. It's not something that has been done in Star Trek. Star Trek's always kept it to a minimum. But I think in this case, I loved that scene. I mean, it hurt. Oh my gosh, it hurt to see Jean-Luc Picard spoken to like that. But coming into the scene, we know where Picard's coming from. Mm-hmm. We know his motivations. And I mean, this is Jean-Luc Picard. But the Admiral, this is the first time we see her, and we don't realize, I guess, until the exposition that, yeah, she just saw Picard along with half the galaxy on the Hollow news, you know, the history of Picard leaving the Federation the way he did, you know, the fuller story behind why the Federation abandoned the Romulans and everything. So at first you kind of hate her, but then when you realize where she's coming from, and she's got entirely valid points. And yeah, you know, that was, there was some level of hubris there.
Yeah.
You know, on Picard's behalf to stroll in after being gone for so long and say, you know, hey, you can reinstate me. And then his whole thing about, you know, if my rank makes me too conspicuous, I'll gladly accept a demotion to captain. And, and you know, she really did have a point. So I personally liked the emphasis of her F-bomb.
I did too. I wouldn't say it was the most professional thing to say, but, you know, I hated her at first because it's Picard, but then it's like, you know, he did say it because it wasn't the Federation anymore, and he kind of threw the Federation under the bus, even though, you know, he has reasons for feeling like he did the right thing. I don't know. It's a very complex situation.
It is, and I love that it's not necessarily a clear-cut right and wrong. I think Clancy and Picard both 100% feel that they're in the right. And that's an interesting mirror on, you know, our society as a whole these days.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm glad that it's not a clear-cut right or wrong, and that I get the feeling this series as a whole is going to deal with a lot of this nuance.
Yeah, I like the nuance a lot.
Me too.
Yeah. Chris Foster says, while I wouldn't call it sympathy, I did understand where Admiral Clancy was coming from. While Admiral Picard was definitely on the high moral ground in pushing to save another species, it is never easy to be the one who has to make the hard decisions about resource allocation and priorities. I hope people don't see her as a villain, just someone who may have made the wrong, more conservative choices for the Federation. I don't envy the decision-making she had to do at the time.
Agree with that 100%.
Yeah. And in the thread, somebody also brought up Nechayev. They kind of wanted to see Nechayev, and someone's really hoping that we see her in the series. I don't know that we will, but I do love Admiral Nechayev.
So do I. I would love to see her.
And I got, you know, I met her at STLV, Natalia Nogalik at STLV, and she's just wonderful.
That's what I hear. I hope she's there next year so I can meet her.
Yeah, she's great.
Kung Hui, I don't know if I said your name right. Please let me know. You're a first-time commenter.
Nice. I don't have to do any of the singing this time. That's great.
Could sing the whole, all the comments, too. Kung Hui says, I like the scene because it gives a rational reason, whether or not you agree, for Starfleet's decision to abandon the rescue. It would have been too easy and simplistic to make Picard's case beyond reproach. Yeah, that nuance again.
Yeah, so I expected a lot of people to just hate Admiral Clancy, and I was surprised to see that there was a larger number of comments that were kind of sympathetic to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think that's really interesting. I think that has a lot to do with really good writing, too.
Yes.
And I think the actor's great.
The actor's great, and the way they edited that scene as well. Like you said, she wasn't necessarily the most professional.
Right.
And she delivered some hurtful words, but, you know, there's a basis for why she feels so strongly.
Uh-huh. And Nicholas Paul Collinson from The Edge main show says, I feel like ultimately Admiral Clancy will be one of the good guys. She has the safety of the Federation at heart, and she's clearly being manipulated by Commodore O and the Zhat Vash. I like how we have different looks for different Romulans, especially overdramatic Mohawk Romulan.
That's awesome. Overdramatic Mohawk Romulan was great.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I think it was so cool to see all the different iterations and different kinds of Romulans.
Yes.
It kind of takes us back away from Star Trek kind of putting all the alien species as in monocultures, you know.
Uh-huh.
People look different.
Yes. Humans look different, so do Romulans. And it kind of nips some of that, you know, nips it in the bud of, oh, are they going to be Kelvin Universe Romulans or original series Romulans? Or, yeah, I'm glad they did that as well.
What'd you think of the Zhat Vash?
At first, I didn't love it because, I don't know, it just seemed a little contrived my first watching through. On the subsequent watchings, it seemed to make a little bit more sense, kind of like the Section 31 pulling the strings for the Tal Shiar or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really curious to know where this deep-seated animosity towards synthetic life comes from. I hope that there's a really good story behind that. Because to have... And from what I understood, the Zhat Vash has been around for a long, long, long time.
Right.
So, there better be a really good reason why they're out persecuting synthetics.
Right.
Liam Smart says, I felt sorry for the synthetic guy. Wasn't treated well overall. Reminded me of the holograms at the end of Author. I feel Admiral Clancy might know more than she has said about it to dismiss Picard so rapidly. Done. Let's have next week's now, please.
Liam Smart is also from the Edge main show, and we got like a little Voyager reference there too, I think.
Yeah.
Sarah Woloski says, the episode was good, but I had trouble keeping up with all the names being thrown around. That's a fair point, Sarah. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to the line to help sort that out. Well, we'll do the best that we can. One scene had me freaking out. The Federation is the Anaheim Convention Center. They didn't even CGI anything except for that awesome shot of the Enterprise in the ceiling. Patrick Stewart was standing where I've stood many times. Eeps!
Wow, that's cool.
A couple people commented on that. About it being the Anaheim Convention Center.
We might have to make a pilgrimage there.
Right.
Matthew Dean says, okay, have now seen it, really enjoying it. Finally, some slow burn talky Star Trek for the first time in years. Engaging and interesting, I look forward to seeing where it goes from here. Is it too much to hope that the final end of Picard, wherever that is, features him going off to join the Q Continuum? Ooh, I could handle that.
So, Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi made the same comment, Matthew, on the first episode of Postcards on the Line. We were just talking about the trailer, and she had mentioned that was one of the things that had occurred to her could possibly happen. I kind of hope that doesn't happen, but it would be really cool to see some Q stuff happening eventually.
And probably it would be a better end than Picard dying of
irritable bowel syndrome. Mm-hmm. J.J. Becker says, in the first scene of this episode, we see the android F8 break each of Asimov's laws of robotics in order. Later, we see Girardi holding Picard's copy of Asimov's The Complete Robot Anthology. What entity have we seen recently take control of someone with cybernetic augmentation in a way reminiscent of what happened to F8 in the beginning of this episode? I wonder why Picard goes to Dr. Bana-Yoon instead of Crusher. Is the distance between them emotional or geographical? The Admiral accuses Picard of hubris and then goes on to claim the right to condemn an entire species to death. Well, JJ, there's a lot to unpack in that comment. And I don't know what Asimov's law of robotics are, the laws of robotics, but I would like to know.
I know one of them is to never harm human life.
Okay, so that was definitely broken.
Mm-hmm.
And the allusion to control is not the first time I've heard someone talk about that with regard to this episode.
Even down to the same effect, the Arium eyes.
Right. Yeah, the little eye thing. I don't think that's what they're going to do, but I could be wrong. I loved that we got the Stargazer Doctor, though.
Yeah, that was really cool.
That was so cool. And bringing up Crusher is another good point. I want to know what the situation is with their relationship right now.
They have to at least mention her at some point.
They're going to have to. I mean, we know that the Troys are coming back. We had the LaForge and Worf reference, and, you know, I guess we'll see.
Ben Nicholson says, the TOS music was nice when Picard appeared in San Francisco. I love the new Starfleet uniform. I'm wondering why Lore hasn't been mentioned. Hopefully he will. I love the appearance of Vasquez Rocks, which brought a huge smile to my face. Well, I don't think you can have Star Trek without an appearance of Vasquez Rocks.
Yeah, right? I love this new uniforms.
Me too.
I think they're so cool. I love the texture on the colored part up at the top.
I can't wait to see the cosplay. I can't wait to see you in a scant.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I haven't made them, so...
Joe Keegan.
Joe Keegan, if you're listening,
fire up
I'm
going to
put in
machine.
My order for a Star Trek Picard scant, please. Chris Chaplin says, I love everything about Laris and Zhaban. I hope they remain involved in the story going forward, despite Picard's obvious venture into space. I think I love her because she has many of the qualities which drew me to Picard. She's stern, yet fair, and comes from a place of compassion. She's committed. She's intelligent. She has some wit and isn't afraid to speak truth. The added layer of her former ties to the Tal Shiar makes her an instant favorite for me. Chris, I agree 100%. I love Laris.
Same here.
Laris, yeah. I think she needs her own show, and it should be called I Love Laris.
Yes.
I think she... Orla Brady, I believe is her name. She's so great.
Oh, she's just perfect as Laris. And on one of my rewatches, I'm thinking, you know, it's good to have Tal Shiar friends.
Right?
That would make a great series. My neighbor down the street or across town, Karen Chupless, says, I love Laris too. I would totally watch CSI Romulans, which I have secretly named that section of the episode.
I love that, Karen.
Yes, right on the same page.
It is CSI Romulans. It's so great. I want to ask you what you thought about that scene when they cut back and forth between when they were talking at the vineyard and then they went to the apartment that Daj was in with her boyfriend.
It was probably the third rewatch before I noticed that they were cutting back and forth, because I'm just not that quick. And I think someone had mentioned it in the comments. It took me a second to kind of figure it out. But I guess it took the element out of figuring out the logistics of how did they get into the apartment? How did they find it? It just kind of helped fill in that part of the story without having to worry about the details.
I had to rewind a little bit the first viewing to make sure I knew what was happening, because they kept going back and forth. So I was kind of assuming that I wasn't sure which happened first.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second rewatch I watched with Nate, and he was also confused about it. And so I think a lot of people weren't quite sure of that choice. But when I saw it again the third time, I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think third time's the charm for that.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Daniel Huckfield says, what a great episode. Beautifully paced and beautifully shot. Picard feels like the show Discovery could have been.
I don't know how to respond to these kind of comments, because they've happened several times.
Yeah, I think, well, of course they're going to be compared to each other, because they're running concurrently. I'm sure, just like Deep Space Nine and Voyager were compared to each other, but Discovery... and Picard have different target audiences.
Okay.
I mean, as Star Trek fans, we're going to watch it all anyway, but I know Discovery's not geared toward some frumpy old fart like me. Picard is right up my alley. You know, not to say I'm not going to watch Discovery, especially if Shahzad Latif is back.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess I get where people are coming from with the gentle pot shots at Discovery.
Yeah, I guess so. And Daniel, thank you for your comment. I'm glad that you love Picard. Yeah, it's interesting because I love both, and everything ain't for everybody.
That's true.
Stephen Dawson says, the comics are providing great background to this series, from the Romulan house guests who care so much for Picard to Raffi, the new character introduced. I also think the producers, while selecting certain fan service nuggets to promote, like the forthcoming appearances of Riker, Troy, and Seven, I think they'll save others for shock value, hopefully T'Pol if she's survived this long. First time, long time, by the way. So Steven is a first time commenter, and but a long time listener, he said. Thanks for your comment, Steven. It's glad to have you in the thread. I agree, the comics were really helpful with the characters, especially with Raffi, I think, and the Romulans. For those of you who don't know, spoiler alert, Raffi is also in the Picard Countdown comic, and it's, at least in the comic, she served with Picard on the USS Verity while they were working to evacuate the Romulans from the supernova.
Okay. I haven't read the comics and was curious why she's, yeah, seems to have a little bit of animosity toward Picard.
Now that we don't know, that's not in the comic at all.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But she's familiar with the wine, so.
She threw out her, whatever she had in her jar because she wanted the wine. Did you notice that?
Yes, that was so funny. It was the 86. I mean.
The 86. I loved that scene so much.
Looking forward to seeing more of her.
Yeah, I think I'm going to like her a lot.
Mm-hmm. Chris Hill says, I think I enjoyed this episode more than I did the first one. Learning that the Federation isn't the only galactic power with the Section 31 was really interesting and fun. It's very clear that we know who the Badmiral is in this series, #SwearTrek. I really enjoyed the scene establishing what happened on Mars. It was nice to hear that Geordi wasn't at Utopia Planitia when that all took place, and I'm actually glad they ignored Worf getting killed by Nero in the 09 Countdown comic. We're getting closer to seeing the Troys at home and learning how Seven gets involved in this motley crew of misfits.
Yeah, nice comment, Chris. I think a lot of us were happy that Geordi was okay.
Yeah.
Or La Forge, as Chabon said.
That's right.
La Forge.
Fingers crossed we'll get an appearance.
Oh, I hope so. Rebecca Skipper says, I love the moment when Picard shows how much Data's death has impacted him. He doesn't want to risk the lives he cares about. This reminds me of Spock's conversation to Picard in Unification when he expresses his guilt over getting Kirk involved in negotiating with the Klingons in Star Trek VI. There are so many parallels to previous Trek just from character actions alone. Yeah, there are, Rebecca. Did you notice a lot of that in this episode?
I didn't notice that one, and that's a great point.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, Kirk went back and got the Enterprise and as captain and
to rescue Spock.
Mm-hmm.
And I did pick up that parallel where I'm getting the feeling Picard feels that he can rescue Data. So trying to get a ship and put together a motley crew to go back and rescue Data.
Huh. Oh, interesting. Hmm.
So Patrick Carlin says, anyone notice the use of present tense in relation to the mention of Worf, Riker, and Geordi? I think we can all breathe easy now. Sounds like Geordi didn't die in the attack, as a lot of people had been guessing. Yeah. Well, you know, I hadn't even heard that. But, no, but I don't know. Like I said, I'm slow to pick things up. But I'm glad. I agree with you, Patrick. Glad that they're all alive and kicking.
Yeah. Sean Weston says, how good is this show? Whilst harrowing, again, the Mars scenes are another example of Star Trek Picard showing us more Sol System Federation life than we have ever seen. F8's hacking sped up was really Data-esque. Jat Vash hates synthetic life, but they signed off on intimacy with the machine / abomination. Overall, I have no negatives and want more. I totally thought of Data's being sped up.
Yes.
Of Data being sped up in several episodes.
Yeah.
When F8 was on the panel.
And I did hear that the actor that played F8 had cosplayed Data in the past, and I don't know his whole story.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
But there's, he definitely has a, brings a Data vibe to it.
Uh-huh.
Tony Robinson says, great to see some product placement for Twinings Tea. Well, I didn't see that, but that's...
You didn't notice? No. I didn't notice that either.
That's good to know they survive another few hundred years.
Right. But I feel like Picard would make his own. I feel like he would... I don't know. I don't think he would have prepackaged Earl Grey at this point.
Can they grow it in France?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Also, this may be an unpopular opinion, but I am also like kind of over the Earl Grey references. I think we've had too many in two episodes. Like, we get it. We know that. I feel like it's been mentioned too many times. Like, they didn't need to mention it twice in the premiere.
Well, we'll see if they keep it up or continue to beat it to the ground.
Yeah.
Tim Han says, I like the little nod to Picard's Irromotic Syndrome by the former doctor of the Stargazer in the episode, even if it wasn't mentioned by name. Yeah, I agree, Tim. I like all the subtle hints here and there, the tie-ins to All Good Things.
Uh-huh.
This one wasn't quite so subtle, but there have been a few little nuggets from All Good Things. I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. And I did like that they didn't say it by name, but we all knew what it was. Mm-hmm. Mark Keller says, the plot thickens. I really like the idea of a secret Romulan society operating inside Starfleet. It will be interesting to see how this all plays out. And Chris Agui says, is it only me or has the soundtrack a lot of Lord of the Rings vibes? I love it, but I really wouldn't be surprised if some hobbits walked through some of the scenes. Well, thanks, Mark and Chris. I hadn't thought about that with the Lord of the Rings music.
So don't laugh at me, but I've never seen the Lord of the Rings.
Oh, man. I'm supposed to watch it again soon, but I don't remember it very well.
I don't even know the difference between Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, so...
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Should I have not said that?
I mean, it doesn't offend me. I just know that I know the difference.
Like I said, I'm a little slow.
Oh, my gosh. That is so funny.
Shuman Dewan, I hope I said your name right, says, did you catch this sign on the board cube? This worksite has gone ... days without an assimilation. A Romulan in Starfleet as a Commodore? Have we seen anything like this before? Scary. I did not notice that sign. I'm going to go back and
you
look
didn't?
For it. No. I tell you, I don't pick up on these things.
5,843 days.
That's hilarious. Without an assimilation.
That's like 16 years, I think.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right. I'm rewatching this again tonight. Brian Sherman says, the best bits were in Starfleet headquarters, with Picard bemused at not being recognized, and then the brilliant dressing down from Admiral Clancy. Oh, and I think the theme song might be number two to Voyager's number one.
Interesting, Brian. So, I like that Voyager is your favorite theme music. I love Voyager's, the Voyager's theme music.
I guess I'm old school. I like TOS and TNG.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to pick. It's hard to pick for me because I think they're all so different, but I do really love Voyagers.
I really like Picard's.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And Discoveries. I really like Discoveries.
Uh-huh. Yep. What did you think about the guy at Starfleet headquarters not recognizing
that
him?
That was funny. And yeah. You know what? There were quite a few little digs at Picard's age in this episode. And that stuff gets me. If you want to see me like sob like a baby, those I've fallen and I can't get down, fallen and I can't get up commercials. Oh, I can't handle those. So the little shots at Picard and you know, seeing him dealing with his age and his inevitable, you know, decline into whatever syndrome. One of those was that young man at the Starfleet headquarters. When he gives him his visitor's pass or whatever, and he says, oh, good to see you up and around again, Admiral. Ouch. Good to see you up and around again. And there were a couple other digs as well throughout the episode.
Did they call him a relic or something?
Yes.
Not bad for a... I don't know what they said.
Not bad for a relic. Yeah, the doctor. And then when Laris asked him if he had dementia?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think the Commodore said something to him, or the Admiral, I'm sorry, said something to him as well. But just, ouch.
Yeah. But I think I like that they're taking it all in stride.
Yes.
I mean, he's older than he was.
Yes, and that's exactly what he would be going through in the real world.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. Mikey Leong Chadwick says, Daj was an android. Narek is a spy. Rizzo is a Romulan. Do you think the Discovery Ash / Voke internet guessing / sleuthing has made the writers reluctant to keep mysteries running too long? I don't know.
I'm glad they're not trying to trick us. You know, I think with Discovery, it'll be interesting to see how well that bears to rewatching. It'll be interesting to see how well Discovery stands the test of time. Because so much of it was based on surprising you know, having a trick or something.
And more mysteries, I think. Like, we didn't know any of these characters before. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a whole universe that Picard is built upon.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting thought, though,
and,
Mikey.
Like, Narek and Rizzo, they are mustache-twirling villains from the get-go. There's no hiding the fact that they're the bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we don't have to waste, you know, precious time out of our 10 episodes trying to set up a surprise. We know they're the bad guys. Okay, let's get on with the story. So I like the way that they're doing it.
Yeah, I do, too. And listeners, that brings us to our questions and concerns. There were quite a lot for this episode. Mark Kalzer says, enjoying it, but I wonder if this story is being needlessly padded out in the name of serialization. Could we not just as easily reach this point in the story in one episode? I don't know, because I think about that comment earlier in which somebody says this is the more talky Star Trek.
Yes. Yes. And that's what Picard is known for, is, you know, the staff meetings and the talking scenes and negotiations. And
yeah,
I'm glad they're taking it at this pace. I heard a few people that had seen the first three episodes had said something about, oh, the exposition. And I'm not even noticing that there is exposition. The pacing seems very good to me. It doesn't seem to drag at all. So my personal preference, I like the pace that it's going.
Yeah, I do too, but I'm totally happy that some people don't agree with that and they'd like to see it a little bit faster.
Absolutely. That's why we have Discovery.
Yeah.
Christopher Moak says, where the hell is Section 31? They all go to Ryza and retire? Like, dudes, hello, this is what you guys do and why you exist. You take vacation and let the Romulan ultra-secret cabal move in, right? Badmiral and implanted Romulan spy dressed as a Vulcan. Meh. Good point. Where is Section 31?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think they're going to touch on that at all?
I wonder, because, they should be there. I hadn't really thought about that before, but isn't that what they do?
We never saw Section 31 in any of TNG, any of Voyager. So, like, I don't know.
That's because they're secret.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they're much more underground.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Maybe, yeah, maybe we don't get to hear about it now. And then we've got the Section 31 series, which begins filming, I believe, in May.
Ooh.
So, and who knows what they're going to do with that. Nathan K. Campbell says, Star Trek has traditionally been a show the entire family can enjoy. In fact, I'd wager that most of us here fell in love with Trek as kids. CBS would rather actively exclude a portion of the audience just because their writers aren't creative enough or the directors brave enough to just let actors act, to write without the use of profanity or cheap objectification shots. Well done, Trek. You've stooped to the lowest common denominator.
Well, there's been a lot of unhappiness, I guess, with the profanity.
Yeah, I've definitely heard a lot of that. And I respect that you don't like that, Nathan. You know, some people like it, some people don't.
Yeah. And the cheap objectification shots, what that brings to mind is in one of the Kelvin movies, and again, I've only seen the Kelvin movies like once a piece, the shot of Carol Marcus in her underwear.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, stuff like that, yeah, we can definitely do without. I agree. I hope they don't just go to profanity-laden episodes, but, you know, when it's natural in the moment.
Yeah, I don't feel like we have cheap objectification shots in Picard. And I feel like the profanity, to me, it makes sense. And I mean, I'm a person who uses swears quite liberally, not on the podcast, but in real life. Yeah. And there are studies shown that those who use profanity are inherently more honest than those who don't. Those are actual studies. I don't know how. I don't know. Thank you for your comment, Nathan. And I hope you can see past those things that you don't like and still enjoy the rest of the series.
Frosty Winnipeg says, I thought the instant transporter at Starfleet HQ was badly filmed/conceived. They had people coming in and out on the same side, and you could see the actors stepping aside from each other. I'm not sure how I feel about the scene where Picard talks to Laris and Jaban about the Jat Vash, and it cuts back and forth to Daj's apartment. It's one of the most interesting edits in all of Trek, I dare say. Really like the shot of Picard reflecting off the clock. Nicely done.
Okay. Frosty, I went back and rewatched that scene like 6 times with the transporter thing, and there was one moment in that where there was a girl, a blonde girl, woman on one side, and you saw her just walk through. So there was no transporter shimmer effect with her. With all the other ones, I think all the rest of them were edited correctly and looked good to me. But that one I did notice in the very center transporter, you see her walking in from behind. She's right behind Picard, and then she just walks through the arches. And so I'm in my head canon, she was just walking through. She wasn't transporting. I don't know. I thought it was a really cool effect.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. And I have a theory that they have something on them, whether it's their comm badge or a chip or something, and it's already programmed in there where they're going to transport to. Uh-huh. So if they walk through it, it's programmed, oh, okay, I'm going to transport to Mobile, Alabama, you know, boom. But if they don't have anything on their little comm badge or their chip or whatever it is, and they can just walk through. That's my theory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it was an editing mistake, but maybe it could be. And Frosty also talks about that edit with going back and forth between CSI Romulans.
right.
And Frosty, I loved that shot of Picard in the clock. I thought that was gorgeous also. Yeah. Brandon Shematala says, I was surprised to find out that Soji and the Trill, Nashala Kunamedestifi, are racist. I didn't know Romulans could be so hot. Me neither. And then Brian Diggs says, I don't think that's racist. Narek is probably the first Romulan they have encountered who has been willing to actively flirt with a non-Romulan Vulcan. So this was also a lengthy conversation in the thread. It was very respectful. I was very happy that everyone was very respectful about that. You know, racial tensions can sometimes bring out, you know, some really angry talk, and I think everyone handled it really, really well.
Yeah.
It kind of occurred to me that it was a little bit of an insensitive thing to say when she said, I didn't know Romulans could be so hot. I don't know. It didn't seem to me like it was a racist thing. What did did you think anything about that when you heard it?
No, I would have never picked it up as a racist thing. Although when Brandon pointed it out, you know, I totally get where he's coming from. I really think it's, they're really trying to push the fact that, oh, Narek is so hot. Of course he could just seduce Soji like that. So I think it was more of a, just kind of to push that narrative. I actually kind of thought that dramatic Mohawk Romulan guy was kind of hot, but,
yeah, Nate did too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd be fun to hang with.
He was cool. So I asked Brandi Jackla from the main show about what she thought about that too. And she told me, she said, I took it as more that this is the most interaction that outsiders have had with Romulans, so it's likely that most other races know almost nothing about them. They are extremely secretive, something Laris spoke about in the same episode. And there's obvious racism in the Federation and Starfleet towards Romulans. So, I don't know. It's definitely something to talk about.
They're secretive, they've been the enemy. You know, I think with any words, you know, you need to assume good intent. And in real life, if a Trill had said that to me, I think what she's trying to say is Narek is hot. I think that's the intent behind her message.
Which and you don't agree with.
I personally, I don't agree with, but, you know. And if she used the words, I didn't know Romulans could be so hot. Yeah, I see how that could be interpreted as specious, but I think you always, in any situation, need to consider the intent behind the words. Lord knows I misspeak more than probably anybody. And I never mean to say bad things. They just come out of my mouth. So I guess I'm a little sensitive to, you know, hey, give me a, you know, give me the benefit of the doubt that I'm, what I'm trying to say is screamy Mohawk guy is hot, not something racist. But
yeah, I think she was also saying to me, the intent is not Romulans are usually unattractive. It was that Romulans, we know historically, are the enemy. And so I didn't know I could feel like that kind of affection for Romulan, you know?
Yes, that's actually how I felt last night during the Super Bowl as a Chiefs fan when the 49ers quarterback is so hot.
No, I would have no idea. Thank you, Brian and Brandon, for your comments, and thank you for facilitating such a great conversation in the thread.
Definitely. Ian Bartholomew says, "The more I reflect on this episode, the less I like it. The characterization of the Romulans, pretty much without exception, is just a shade off from what we're familiar with, and the idea of an ultra-Irish Romulan is one that should have been discounted within seconds of being suggested. The decimation of the Tal Shiar in the assault on the Founders is ignored. The idea that there's an ultra-ultra-secret agency within an ultra-secret agency that's way secreter and more deadly because it really hates androids is unconvincing and, frankly, lazy. The idea that Picard's friends are elite Tal Shiar makes no sense either. It doesn't fit with what we know about the Tal Shiar. It's also a missed opportunity to have a bit more moral ambiguity." A lot of good points there, Ian. Yeah, that's right. The Tal Shiar, I guess, wasn't completely decimated by the Founders. Mm-hmm. I felt the way you did at first, my first viewing about this ultra, ultra secret agency within the ultra secret agency. That didn't sit well with me. After subsequent viewings, it makes a little more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for your well thought out comment, Ian. Somebody else in the thread also commented that we didn't know we were going to get Vash's first name.
Yes.
In the episode, which is Jot, apparently.
Ah, that's right. Someone asked if that should count for the Picardingo bingo game.
Oh, because of the Vash aspect of it. Is Vash in your Picardingo?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see Vash.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm okay without it. Joshua DeVries said, "I feel like this episode will work better once I've seen episode 3. The paranoid, unsettled tone of the episode works well as an act 2 of a larger story, but as a complete episode, it felt desolate and bleak. The opening sequence was legitimately terrifying, and the conversation with Clancy was very uncomfortable to watch. I understand that modern television is different from 90s television, but it's sad that Star Trek's new premise is that utopia isn't realistic because humans will always be intolerant, backwards, and corrupt. I like it when Star Trek challenges utopian concepts, but after seeing this episode, I wouldn't ever want to live on this version of Earth." Hmm. Well, Joshua, I appreciate your comment. Thank you. I think back to somebody who had said that in a previous Postcards on the Line episode, that utopia is an exercise in complacency, and that once you think you have all the problems solved, you kind of take it for granted. And I think that's kind of what they're going for here, is that things constantly change. You know, sometimes tensions are higher, sometimes people make more questionable moral decisions, and sometimes things get much more difficult, and there are a lot more gray areas than just black and white.
And that's a great point about complacency, because as human beings, we always have to stay vigilant, both individually and as a society. This might sound a little blasphemous here, but I don't believe that humans will ever have that utopia. And just because exactly of what this series is bringing out, we had the utopia from the Next Generation era. And now you've got, you know, circumstances that happened, Mars, Romulans, and now you have a Federation that's pretty, what's the word I'm trying to think of, where they don't like them foreigners? I can't think of the word.
Like xenophobic?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. You have kind of a xenophobic Federation right now, because you do become complacent. So I think that's a great point. And I think if you look backward in time, you know, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, are we really that much different now than we were then? You know, we've got 5G and we've got, I don't know what other technology we have, smartphones and 3D printers. But, you know, are humans really that different now than we were 1,000 years ago?
Yeah.
And in the Picard timeline, a few hundred years in the future, yeah, they've got transporters and replicators, but are they really different as humans than we are now? I think it's more of individually and as a culture being vigilant and not letting us become complacent and xenophobic and intolerant and hateful.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to your last words, listeners. Go ahead, Rhea.
All right, again from my neighbor down across town, Karen Chupless. The Federation has been compromised. I must say, though, that the Admiral did have a side to the pullout that was not unreasonable in many ways, and it more realistically portrays the pressures the Federation must face, pressures from so many worlds in an alliance, and how pressures are applied. I know many folks like to think it can be just as easy at this point to coexist, but from Journey to Babel onward, there's plenty of evidence that there are many pressures, political and practical, about making decisions that affect hundreds, or by this time thousands, of cultures and populations.
Yeah. That's kind of a good follow-up to Joshua's concerns, too. Yeah, thanks, Karen, for your thoughtful comment. Hakur Gunman says, I can't explain it, but Picard is exactly what I expected, and yet so different. And I love it, e.g. how they linger on some scenes and allow things to take the time it needs. I am intrigued by the social commentary the show is making already, and so grateful that that's the part which brought Sir Pat Stew back. Star Trek is a beautiful mirror of some of the highest values we can have. We've always had badmirals, the argument that those in past Trek were all rogues and that this is different, in a bad non-Star Trek way, is something I don't buy. We all have potentials for good and bad in our hearts and minds, and I think Picard is showing us the moral compass we need to have and never resign to complacency in face of injustice and unfairness, as it only allows the baser views to prevail. Can't wait for episode 3. P.S. My wallet is threatening breaking up with me when Eagle Moss will start making all the ships, shuttles, and star bases we see in Picard. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Hooker, I agree with you 100% here, my friend. Yes, we've always had bad morals and bad madors.
We always will, right?
Yes.
And I like that the complacency allows the baser views to prevail.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Kevin Rhodes says, Star Trek Picard is absolutely on point and amazingly perfect in every possible way for 2020. I can't believe it. The contributions, or possible contributions, of people in their twilight years are all too often completely ignored, looked over, and ridiculed as even being legitimate or worthy considering. That's just to name a couple points. Personally, I love this Star Trek as mystery to be solved, as an hour-long drama with some action, as opposed to an action show with some drama. The speed of it, against which I see some resistance, I find spectacular. You can go literally live inside this world in a way that wasn't even possible on the old shows.
Yeah, Kevin, thank you. Kevin and I were chatting in the thread, too, and we realized that we know a couple people in common. He's friends with a couple people that I toured with several years ago.
Oh, cool.
And a couple of Broadway
tours. Small world, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Hooker and I met in Birmingham at Destination Star Trek.
You went to Destination Star Trek?
I did.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, part-time airline job. So.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That's when it pays off. It was awesome. But he's wonderful.
Well, Rhea, how do you think the fans responded to the second episode of Picard?
Overall, very favorably. You know, there are some points there that struck a couple nerves, but I think as a whole, people really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like that there were so many comments and questions and concerns.
Yes.
In this episode.
It just kind of, I think it's a testament to the different layers that are in this show.
Yeah, and I think people are really watching very closely.
Yes.
And critically. And it's so cool because it just allows for more conversations, more opinions, and I think that's great.
Yes, and people bring up all the little things I miss, like that sign on the wall on the board cube.
Yep. We can always count on the listeners to point out things that we might not always see.
Yes.
Be sure to check out all of our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show is Tracks on the Line with Mike and Max. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where we will collect your feedback for postcards. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Line. Rhea, it was so fun talking about Picard with you today. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to see you again and to talk with
you. Yes, it was a blast. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Where can people find you online?
Well, as the crusty old fart that I am, I don't have Twitter or Instagram. I do have a MySpace account somewhere, but probably the best way is in the Babel Conference. I do have a Facebook account, so I try and pop in and comment on things here and there.
Okay, did you just say MySpace?
Maybe.
Okay.
I haven't logged in over a decade, I'm sure, but it's still out there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure mine is out there somewhere too, but no idea. I wonder what's being done with that now.
Yeah, good question.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield, and of course, lurking in the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards on the Line, right after the third episode of Star Trek Picard, The End is the Beginning, airs. Hailing frequencies open.
If I go too fast, I get all caught in my mouth.